As with anything in quality and reliability, there's a process involved. And here we're going to talk about the various basic steps to accomplishing a design of experiments. And we've mentioned a number of these things already. And really, the start is well, what's the objective? What are we trying to achieve? How do we know when we have the appropriate answer, for example? And then it's looking at the factors and levels. Well, what are the variables that are important to us? And what's the range over which those variables may exist? You know, it doesn't make sense to use materials that we know are going to fail. Let's use a range of materials that would likely give us a viable product and different settings or different components or different configurations. Then we assign the factors to the array. So that L8 Taguchi array, the A1, B1, C1, each of those, then get assigned a particular factor. Now, there's a little bit of thought that goes into that, and we'll talk about that in a future lesson. But the idea is that we deliberately place the factors within the array, and then in part, it's looking for where the interaction terms may exist and being able to detect those if they do exist. And then we look at, well, what are we going to measure? How are we going to measure it? Are we looking for a result that is close to a specific target, or is more is better or less is better? Are we trying to optimize yield, which would be higher the yield, the better? Or are we trying to minimize scrap, in which case the number of defective units would be reducing it would be a better thing to do. And then we set out and plan our experiment. Now, it's surprising, and you probably already know this, the amount of detail that goes into creating even 8 different prototypes and the details that go into the test facilities and the analysis equipment, the measurement equipment. You know, as an aside, make sure your measurement equipment, it can make an accurate and measurement, but that also minimizes measurement error. You don't want the noise of your measurement system confusing the results you get from your experiment. Then we get to have fun. Let's go run the experiment. Let's go set up and run and make the measurements. And all of the good scientific experimental methods in keeping track of notes and noting anything unusual, keeping track of the steps, take photos as you go along, all of those good things come into play is doing good experimental work. Gather up the results and make some measurements. Now here I've listed mean and signal to noise ratios, and those are relating to the Taguchi experiment. So this process is very similar for classical DOE. Instead of mean and signal to noise, it would be doing the ANOVA table analysis and doing essentially the statistical analysis, which is very much like the mean and signal to noise ratio analysis for Taguchi's. Then we put up those response tables. I showed one earlier where it showed the magnitude of the response or the change of response when I go from level 1 to level 2, for example. And then from that, we can draw some conclusions. And a typical next step is to run a confirmation run where we take our set of levels for each factor. And it may not be, and it's likely not, one that we already ran previously, is build that and run it and make measurements, and are we getting the same results as we were expecting from the analysis? So those are the basic steps. Let's go through a couple of these in a little bit more detail. So let's say we're doing a molding project, and our objective is to optimize the molding process so we get the most strength. And this is based on an example that Ranjit Roy put together in his book on Primer on Taguchi Methods. So we want to maximize our strength. And then we sit down with some people that are familiar with the molding process and that material and come up with a list of possible factors. Now, in some extent, this is engineering knowledge and background and experience. It's also a little bit of brainstorming. But we quickly can find many possible factors that would impact the resulting strength. And so from that, we're going to pick 3 of them that our team basically is saying these are the most likely or most significant factors that we should do the experiment on. If we want to optimize the strength, these are the three numbers to do. Now, if I've got 15 or 20 different factors and I'm not sure which are the top three, then a screening experiment may make sense. Look for the factors that provide the most signal, most change on the results, and then use those as your controlling variables in this experiment, your selected factors. So here we did some analysis, and from our history, we know about pressures and temperatures and set times, and give them a reasonable range so that any combination of these things are very likely to provide us with a product that will look and feel and behave much like the final product. It just may have a different strength level. But all of these would actually make a product, make a molded part. So in this case, I have three factors and two levels each. So an L4 array is appropriate for this, the 2 raised to the third power. Now, in this particular case, because I'm only dealing with three factors at two levels each, I only have 8 different experiments that are 8 combinations of these things I could do. But an L4 reduces that to just 4 experiments. So it's a fractional factorial experiment. Whereas if I ran all 8 different runs, 8 combinations, that's a full factorial experiment. So in this case, the array is something that we can look up. Taguchi and his cohorts and other statisticians have created these arrays that allow us then to sort out and create the prototypes we need or the setups we need for our experiments. So what this means is that we set level 1 and 2 for each of the different factors that we're dealing with. So in this case, we've got injection pressure. There's a high and a low value, 1700 and 2400. And then we've got temperatures, 65 and 95, and then set time, 6 and 9 seconds. And notice the 6 seconds is here. Oops, actually I have to turn the pen on for it to work. Is here and here, whereas the mold temperature alternates. And here, the first factors are the first two. Now, they're very deliberately set up so that if you remember from the L8 array, these are the 4 different cells out of the 8 total that will give us that balanced ability to do the analysis for main effects. And so this provides a recipe for, and I should go back to the previous slide. This is the recipe. So run number 1 is level 1 for each of my 3 factors. And run number 3 has got level 2, level 1, and then level 2. So it gives us specific guidance of what to set our 3 different factors at, given our different levels that we're interested in. And if I do that, I'll be able to do the analysis to figure out the main effects for each of these 3 factors. So we set up our recipe, we put in the numbers, we set up our equipment so that we get the different pressures, different temperatures, and different set times in this particular case. Now, good practice is that you would randomly order the runs, is use a random number generator of some sort and take these 4 different runs, and barring any other logistics needs, like the temperature of the mold, it may make sense to run both of them at 1700, especially if it takes significant changes to the equipment or time to bring it to a different pressure level or different temperature, for example. So a little bit of practicality comes into play, but where possible, completely randomize the sequence that you actually run the experiment. And it minimizes the chance that the order you run has an effect on the final result. There's nothing that we don't want to run it just in 1, 2, 3, 4 order, but instead run it in a random order when possible. And so what we're measuring is the yield strength, and we have an existing process to measure that, and it measures it in megapascals. Currently, the design is at 28 megapascals, and we would like it to be higher than that. So we're running a set of experiments with an intent to create a result that is better than, and higher is better, stronger is better in this particular case. And so the types of analysis that we want to run is dependent on what our objective is. And in this particular case, larger is better. And so we're going to pick a type of approach that allows us to make that analysis. In classical statistics, we use an analysis of variance, ANOVA, or something similar to that, in order to do the analysis. The end result is almost exactly the same. The Taguchi has set it up to be slightly different, but the underlying statistics are very, very similar. So depending on if we want larger is better or smaller is better or a nominal value or maybe a target value, then we're going to use something called a mean squared deviation. Now, this is the variance calculation. You may remember this from the early lessons on statistics, where I have my individual values and the mean value difference squared. And then I'm dividing by the number of samples I have. So if I'm interested in hitting a particular target, which may or may not be the mean, right? It might not be the average value of our results, but maybe a specific target for our specification. That would be this y sub zero. And it could be offset to the up above or below where the actual mean value is. But I'm using a very similar structure. Take an individual values, get the difference, square it, and divide by n. And that gives us the mean square deviation. It's not exactly the variance. It is if y sub zero equals mu. But in this case, it can be a specific target. Now, in the experiment we were setting up on the yield strength, we were looking for something that was better than, or a higher value was better. So we could set a target that is above where we're at currently and look for that. But that may not be the best way to approach it because just higher is better in our particular case. And so this is a type B, which is bigger is better. Type S, conveniently, is smaller is better. Is calculating the mean squared deviation uses the inverses of the squares of the values of these individual values. And then it allows us then to get basically the distance above the zero line. And then I'm able to combine those and divide by n, and I get a value that's the mean square deviation. Now, if smaller is better, I just take the squares and add those up. And if it's on a target, then I strip out the target and then square it and go forward. So in each case, I get a value that is a mean square deviation. And the advantage is that if I do a negative 10 log of the mean squared error or mean squared deviation, I get a term called the signal to noise ratio. Get rid of the n there. And that provides us a ratio of the response versus the amount of noise in the overall system. And so if it's a very variable results we're getting, the noise term of this ratio would be larger and our signal to noise ratio will be smaller. On the other hand, if we are working with a factor that is very, very responsive and gives us a huge change in the result, then the signal to noise ratio would be very high. And so something that's higher is better in all three cases. And so that's where the various calculations for the mean squared error takes into account. Are we looking for smaller or bigger or nominal type of a setup is for our results? But once we get signal to noise ratio, the interpretation is the same in all cases. We'll get to that in a moment. So back to our experiment. We set this up. We sort out the order we're going to run it. We actually go run the experiment, and knowing that we're dealing with the logistics of having time on the material, we have to have material, we have to have time on the equipment, we have to have all of the various safety elements taken care of. We do the good scientific work, experimental work, taking notes and observations and so on as we go. It's often a good practice to make replicates. So if I only have four runs on a molding piece of equipment, maybe make 10 parts if it's logistically feasible to do, economically feasible to do, make a number of replicates of that and use those individual readings to further enhance the value you get out of the experiment. Now, you can do it with just one. You lose a little bit of the analytical approach, but adding some replicates doesn't hurt by any means. And then, you know, run the experiment. Now, here's a stickler point, no pun intended, is stay with the plan. If I set up my runs, and in this particular case, I have four different runs, and I find that the 1700 kilopascal pressure just seems a little low. I'm not really happy with those results. I think I could do better. So I kick it up to 1800 megapascals for the second run using that level. Well, in that case, then the comparison, I'm not able to strip out the lower pressure level from the other one because I have two separate values for it. And likewise, if I'm changing each or any of the other variables in different levels, then I lose the ability of the experiment to be analyzed to give us the results we're looking for. So once you set up the recipe, essentially, and set up your runs, stick to it unless you have absolute compelling reason to change, and then look at the impact on your product. So if you change a level, you should change it anywhere that level comes into play. And in order to make the analysis actually be meaningful. Now, I mentioned randomizing. So when possible, randomize the order of runs or randomize the source material, all the other things that go into setting up and running your experiment is randomize what you can. And as I mentioned previously, is don't just randomize it in your head or write down random numbers as you think of them. We as humans are really, really bad at it. Remember 3 and 7. So the idea is use a random number generator, whether it's a computer generated from a statistics package or Excel or something like that, or from a random number table that you may be able to find a book that has a couple of tables for it. But use something to randomize the elements of your experiment that you can. It further minimizes the amount of noise that's going to impact and cloud the results you're getting. All right, so then I make my runs, I create some parts, and I go off and do some testing, and I find these strengths. Now, these strengths are not the end of the day. I don't just pick the highest one and go, all right, well, that's good, let's do that. That may not be the best of all eight. Remember, there's 8 possible combinations here. And I only did 4 experiments. So there may be a connection between these that allows us to get something better than 34 megapascal strength. So let's take a look at some of the analysis on the experiments. And we'll do that in the next lesson. Here's another, that list of reviews. So we're up to get the results. Right, so we've made the runs, we made the measurements, we've made multiple replicates, we would have the individual readings available. If we only have one, then we only have the one reading. Next, we'll take a look at the analysis and coming to conclusions. So if you're running an experiment, even if it's not a design of experiments, if you change midway, if you change equipment settings or you change the design for the different parts you're measuring and aren't keeping good notes of this and are not doing a solid scientific experimentation and note-taking, you're just fiddling. One of the worst examples of this was my boss some 30 years ago on a piece of a polymer extrusion equipment. And we were running a various set of experiments, and he came down kind of in the middle of our experiment one afternoon and asked how it was going. And then he took a look at the equipment and said, oh, that'll never work. You need to turn this part up. And you know, we patiently waited for him to leave and then changed it back and got the examples that we were looking for. But it would have completely tossed out probably 4 hours of work if we would have kept that change in the set of experiments we were running. So at least I didn't learn that one the hard way. We would have still got results. It just they would have not been as meaningful. So as you set up and run a design of experiments, is stick to the plan, and it's pretty critical. All right, now let's figure out what to do with the readings that we get as a result of the experiment.